Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Totally Whole Blog Talk Radio, where I am your host, Dr. Rosemary Cook. I'm excited to be able to talk to you one more time. On tonight, our topic is going to be, is self-love selfish? Is it even biblical? The concept of self-love is written in the Bible. Matthew 22:39 tells us to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. Is this a commandment, or does this imply that we are already loving ourselves? Too many of us take the time to love, to serve, and to give to others, but do we take that same time to love, to give, and to serve ourselves? Somehow along the line, we have gotten it twisted. Somehow we've gotten the message that self-love is selfish. So do we truly know how to love ourselves? So tonight, let's break down this whole concept of self-love. I want to open up with this story that's found in a book called The Urgings of the Heart. And the authors are Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N, and Au, A-U. And the story goes like this. Once upon a time, a woman moved into a cave in the mountains to study with a guru. She said that she wanted to learn everything there was to know. The guru supplied her with a stack of books and left her alone so she could study. Every morning, the guru returned to the cave to monitor the woman's progress. In his hand, he carried a wooden cane. Each morning, he asked her the same question: have you learned everything there is to know yet? And each morning, her answer was the same. No, she said, I haven't. Then the guru would strike her over the head with his cane. This scenario repeated itself for months. But one day, this very wise guru entered the cave. He asked the same question of her, and he heard the same answer and raised his cane to hit her in the same way. But the woman grabbed the cane from the guru, stopped his assault in midair. The woman was relieved to end the daily batterings, but she was afraid of his reprisal, so the woman looked up at the guru. And to her surprise, the guru was smiling. Congratulations, he said. You have graduated. You now know everything you need to know. How's that? The woman asked. You have learned that you will never learn everything there is to know, and you've learned how to stop the pain. I'm talking tonight about self-love. The question is, do you love yourself? Or do you believe that self-love is selfishness? So that illustration was an example of a woman who was not aware of the lack of self-love until she realized that she could stop the pain. This woman learned that she had choices to end her daily batterings. And as we look at this example, let's think about our own attitudes and behaviors that are deterrents to self-love, those things that get in the way of us learning how to love ourselves. Could it be fear? Maybe it's a lack of awareness. Or maybe there are some beliefs that we hold on to that prevent us from truly learning how to love ourselves. And when I talk about self-love, I'm not talking about self-absorption. I'm not talking about a person that's so into themselves that they are not able to give to others. So let's look at self-love. So my question for us is, how many of us have learned how to stop the pain? Are we still looking to learn all there is to know? Are we searching for answers outside of ourselves because of our own emotional pain or mental pain? Are we looking for fulfillment in empty places? Are we looking in dead religion or secular knowledge, or feeding our spirits on spiritual junk food when the answers already lie within? Those of you who are listening who are believers in Christ, the Bible reminds us in Ephesians 3 and 1 that we have been blessed with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places. But somehow we won't tap into the blessings that are already inside of us. We look to people, places, and things to fill us, to cause us to feel better about ourselves. We look to people, jobs, money, status. We look to our children. We look to our education. We look to spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, wives. We even look to church work as a way to escape the pain from the daily batterings of life. I said something right there. But all too often, the problem is not outside of ourselves, but the problem stems from a lack of self-love. My question for my listeners: how many of you are in relationships with gurus? It could be friends, supervisors. It could be wives, husbands, people who control by fear, control you by their threats, who control by intimidation tactics. Ever worked on jobs where their supervisors threaten to write you up or to give you a bad evaluation, or threaten that if you didn't do what they asked you to do, that they would fire you? Anybody ever worked on jobs where there were gurus? What about being in relationships with people, spouses, that take liberty to batter you physically, mentally, or emotionally? How about those who are in relationships with people who constantly violate your rights? They disrespect you. They call you out of your name. They don't allow you to be yourself. They want to silence you. They want to isolate you from family and friends. How many of you have chosen to subject yourselves to this treatment, not realizing, like the woman in the cave, that you can stop the pain? So how long before we wake up, reach up, and take control of our own destiny? How long before we change the atmosphere and choose another path? When will we learn to spend our time wisely, caring for ourselves and not engaging in trivial pursuits, looking to learn all there is to know in vain? When will we give up the victim mentality, giving our fate over into the hands of another? My listeners, when will we learn to love ourselves? So what is self-love? Self-love is an attitude of caring for ourselves emotionally, financially, physically, and spiritually. But before we can demonstrate self-love, we need to talk about how do we get the message twisted that love of self is selfish. As caregivers, and women are known as caregivers, But then there are men who are caregivers as well. But the notion of a caregiver is one who wants to take care of others. And as women, our nature is to take care of others. And we as women often internalize this to mean that we put our needs on hold so that the other person's needs can be taken care of. And the result, many times, is an inability to say no. The result is an excessive sense of responsibility for the welfare of others. And notice I said excessive sense of responsibility for the welfare of others. But not to exclude men, some men care for families at the expense of caring for themselves. And in turn, they neglect their physical health, their mental health, and even emotional and spiritual health. So what that says is that to some degree, we have relinquished control of our lives over to someone else, and usually not to God. Before we can begin to change, we must each discern, to what degree have I relinquished control over my life? I want to talk first about this attitude of neglect of self. Having grown up in church, church dogma and church tradition may have taught us that to love like Jesus meant that we must sacrifice ourselves in order to take care of others. To some extent, sacrifice of self is good and it's noble. But the question is, to what extent do we sacrifice ourselves in order to take care of others? I have an illustration. A priest tells how this lesson was driven home to him in his final year in seminary. One of his professors was lecturing on how we ought to see ourselves in relationship to the church. The professor said, "You should find your greatest joy in giving yourselves completely to the service of the church. You should desire no life of your own. You should let yourself be used by the church in whatever way the church needs you." According to this spirituality of self-sacrifice, the message was that the Christian ideal is to love selflessly without regard for oneself. That sounds lofty and noble, but is it healthy? I don't think so. When I think back over my own life and my experience having grown up in a denomination that required tremendous sacrifice of time in service to God, I can remember we would have Sunday services. We would have two, sometimes three services on Sunday. And then there would be a couple of services during the week. Then there would be a Friday night services, and then sometimes on Sunday, Saturday nights, we would have joy night. So being in church all of that time really allowed no time to care for self or even to invest time in family and even spend time developing your other outside interests. There was this one woman who was a church member. And at that time, I wanted to go back to school. I already had a bachelor's degree, and then I decided to go back to get a master's degree. And the woman said to me, "You are going to have too much education." You know, she was implying that there was something wrong with me wanting to pursue higher education. So the message that I was receiving was that I was somehow doing something that might not have been godly or holy because I wanted to pursue higher education. So that message of self-care or just engaging in pursuits to better oneself could be construed as selfishness. But this distorts the true nature of the scripture that says, love your neighbor as yourself. But the truth is of the matter is that we don't know how to truly love ourselves because we carry around messages. And sometimes the messages are unconscious. And the message is that we have relinquished our control over to others. But how do we regain control over our lives and begin the process of self-love? The first response is learning how to take care of ourselves. So it's an attitude of self-care, an attitude towards ourselves and our lives that says, I am responsible for myself. I am responsible for tending to my spiritual, emotional, physical, and financial well-being. I am responsible for my choices, for setting and achieving my goals. I am responsible for how much I enjoy life, for how much pleasure I find in daily activities. It's an attitude of mutual respect. It means that we learn to live our lives responsibly, but we also allow others to live their lives as they choose, as long as they don't interfere with our decisions to live as we choose. Think about people that you are in relationship with and ask yourself, am I looking for my spouse, my friend, my significant other to take care of my needs, my spiritual needs, my emotional needs, my financial well-being? Am I relinquishing control of my life over to someone else? Am I making someone else responsible for my own happiness, for how much I enjoy life, for how much pleasure I find in my day-to-day activities? When I work with people, I really listen to the language that they use. And often, people are looking to other people to make them happy. So when I get down to the crux of the matter, I have found out that people really have not learned how to love themselves, nor have they learned how to take care of themselves. So self-care is an attitude toward ourselves and our lives that says I am responsible for myself. So it means giving ourselves what we need and not looking for someone else to do it for us. It's great and it's wonderful to be in healthy relationships, loving relationships where you have your spouse or your significant other who really is concerned about you and who wants to make you happy. That's a blessing. That's a gift from God. But the problem comes in when you demand that they make you happy, that when they aren't doing what you think they should do, then you have an attitude. That's an indication of a lack of self-love. So when we give ourselves what we need and not look for other people to do it, then that's a healthy approach to self-love and a healthy approach to relationships. So it's up to us to give our own selves time and space. You know, we ought to give ourselves the opportunity to not be perfect. When I talk to individuals in counseling, many times I ask them if they have ever heard of the Bill of Rights. It's called the Personal Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights, it tells you what you are entitled to in interpersonal relationships. One right says, I have the right to ask for what I want, which means that we should not assume that other people know what we want. That's how our relationships end up badly, because we assume that the other person knows what we want, but taking responsibility for yourself, you say, I can ask for what I want. Another right says, I have the right to say no to requests or demands I can't meet. Think about, when did you say no to someone and they threw you on a guilt trip? They got angry at you because you said no. You basically expressed a no, I can't do this. If they love you, they would not try to coerce you to do something that you don't want to do. Another right. I have the right to express all of my feelings, positive or negative. And you have a right to be honest about how you feel. If you aren't happy or if you are angry or if you are disappointed, you have a right to express that and not allow the other person to make you feel bad because of how you feel. Another right, I have the right to change my mind. I have the right to make mistakes and not have to be perfect. And I want to pause there for a moment because sometimes we are driven by perfectionism and we feel that we have to always be perfect and we can't relax because we are uptight wondering whether I said the right thing, whether I looked the right way, whether I have the right outfit on, you know, whether I'm making this person feel a certain way. And then when we feel that we don't have the right to make mistakes and that we have to be perfect, we hold ourselves hostage and we allow other people to put us in bondage because we feel that we're not perfect, and then other people will demand perfection of us. Another right. I have the right to follow my own values and standards. So please, my listeners, don't make excuses for your own values, for what you believe, for your own standards. Self-love says, this is what I believe. These are my values, and that should be okay. So I want you to Google the Personal Bill of Rights and just see what you think about them and whether you violate your own rights or do you give in when you really should love yourself enough to hold yourself to a standard. Another right is I have the right to my own needs for personal space and time. So when was the last time you gave yourself space and you gave yourself time? And the truth is that it's okay for you to have space. It's okay for you to have time to take care of you. So one of the things that we need to examine as it relates to self-love is our own attitudes towards ourselves and towards our lives and ask ourselves, do I have certain rights that I'm holding for myself? Do I know my rights and do I value these rights, not allowing other people to violate them? So no matter, you know, how good looking he or she is, how much money he or she makes, how many promises they make to promote you, or how many threats a person makes to demote you, no matter how much a pressure they apply, whether they use intimidation tactics, no matter how much you love them or how often they tell you that they love you, don't surrender yourself. You know, don't negate yourself. Don't deny yourself at the expense of somebody else's peace of mind. So self-love is not surrendering your own position at the expense of your own peace, your own values, and your own wholeness. So self-love is demonstrated by self-respect. So the second thing that I want to talk about as it relates to self-love is this notion of codependency. So if you know your rights, you're able to set some standards and you're able to follow your own beliefs. But some people don't know their rights because they have learned perhaps from childhood how to be codependent. In mental health, codependency has been used to apply who was so intricately involved with an alcoholic or a drug addict that their lives revolved around a person's behavior. But today, codependency can be related to issues around self-esteem or setting limits, intimacy skills, or compulsive activity, usually centered around helping other people. It's not knowing where your limits are and crossing over into somebody else's space. So the goal of believers as it relates to knowing our rights is to free us up emotionally so that we can surrender to a God whose love for us heals us and frees us from the bondage of codependency. Galatians 5:1 says, "Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ have made you free, and be not entangled again with a yoke of bondage." The epitome of a person who lacks self-love is the codependent. To be codependent means that you lack self-love. So codependency is not mature love. It's a very immature type of love. It's unhealthy for ourselves, and it's also unhealthy for the person that we love, because it stifles our growth and the growth of our loved ones. What are some signs of codependency? One sign of codependency is compulsive giving. A person who gives self-sacrificially, a person who's generous, other-directed, and idealistic. Now, these are great values. These are great Christian values. But what distinguishes self-sacrificing generosity, idealism, and other-directed behavior is the quality of the giving. This person gives because they should. They give because it's a must. It's not a response of genuine love. I'm sacrificing because I love. I'm giving because I love it. I give because I have to give. It's a compulsion. So that's the distinction between healthy giving and codependent giving. The codependents, they give because they should, and it's more of a flight from self. There is some compulsive technique, some addictive quality behind it. If I don't do it, who else will? So this does not indicate a person who has died to self, as the scripture reminds us that we are to die to self, and our giving should be a reflection of our love to God for all he has done, as opposed to I give because I'm afraid of the consequences, or I give because it makes me look good. That's not healthy giving. That's compulsive giving, and that's an example of codependency. So persons who suffer from low self-esteem and feelings of being unlovable are often codependents, and they strive to overcome these painful feelings by proving to others that I'm good because I give. I'm good because I serve. I'm good because I'm not selfish. I'm selfless. So that tells the world and tells everybody that I'm a good person, and therefore I'm worthy of love. So in our culture, doing good is often equated with being good. So codependents can easily become addicted to helping others, thereby justifying themselves by their good works. So I want to just stop here for a moment. I have some listeners on the line. So I want to propose this question to you about self-love. Is self-love selfish? Is it biblical? Do you have any experiences where you learn how to love yourself? If you want to join in on the conversation, just hit 1 on your phone and I will invite you into the studio. Do I have any callers on the line? Another example of a person that lacks self-love, example of codependency, is a poor self-image. Okay, look like I have a caller who just hit 1.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes?
Welcome to Holy Whole.
Yes, I would just listen to the call.
Yeah.
And it was a blessing, especially when you asked the question about self-love and you touched on choice.
Okay, can you tell us who you are?
Okay, my name is Brother Mike, and I met Sister Bridget through Minister Buya a few weeks ago, and they've been telling me about the call.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I got on last Monday, but it was no call last Monday, so I was told that it will be one tonight. That's why I'm on.
Okay.
And awesome. Thank you. And it was really uplifting. You touched on so much. I'm taking notes. And when I say so much, it's like your cup run over. It makes your cup run over. But it's a blessing. But I only can touch on one thing, the choices. You touched on that at the beginning. And I found out from experience that it's not self-love when I go into a relationship, a business, or anything, that my choice from the beginning should never have been. And especially when I've learned to expect to be reciprocated and the relationship to be mutual. If not, I'm not operating in self-love, but a lot of times the person that I committed to was not able to reciprocate or return it in any way, shape, or form, but because of my delusion, my flesh, my whatever. And then I'm in a relationship when I'm stuck and I'm demanding something from someone that I should never have been involved in.
All right.
But hindsight is always 20/20.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and God forgives us and God makes the crooked ways straight. And you touched on impersonal relationship. And to me, it's the same. And do I have a right to change my mind? I do. Mm-hmm. But if it's a complimentary relationship, the degree that I change my mind will not be in a extreme opposite direction. It's not going to turn the boat over. It's not going to sink us financially. I have not met another person. And you may not be everything, but you was enough because I realize I'm not everything, if that makes
That's
sense.
That's right.
I just want to thank you. And last question, do you have a book that you wrote or are you writing a book?
Well, you know, I do have a book in me. I have several chapters floating around, and I need to compile all of my writings into a book. So that is something that I'm considering. I just need to take the time, or make the time, rather, to go ahead and write the book.
Well, this was a confirmation, and I'll close with that, of your book that's in your – because that's another thing I had – I hear things, and like when I say that, I didn't know you, but something in me saying that that's a book, that's volumes. This needs to be set up on a consistently basis, wherein people need to be able to know I can go to this place every whatever day at whatever time, and I can be taught certain things, and it's going to change me. It's going to help me, if that makes sense. So
well,
just thank you, and I want – well, when I see Minister Bowie, I'll thank him, and if I see Sister Bridget again, I'll thank her because – we need, and so many times, the people behind the podium is not delivering like you're doing now. And I'm not judging. It's a fact.
Yeah.
And I'll close with that for real.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
My brother. God
bless
you.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
So do we have any other listeners on the line? Okay, looks like I have another person who has a response. Good evening. Welcome to Totally Whole.
Good evening. Hi.
Yes. Hi. Can you introduce yourself?
This is Adonna Massey.
Hi, Adonna. Thank you for calling. So what what do you have to add to the conversation?
Yeah, I was just listening to Brother Mike and his response, and I think he said a very valuable word is taught. A lot of times we have not been taught that we should love ourselves. Biblically, in the church, we had been taught sacrifice yourself. But the reality is, Jesus made the ultimate sacrifice, but we don't have to sacrifice ourselves. We don't have to put ourselves on the cross because Jesus got on the cross, and he did the work. So, you know, years ago, we got mixed messages growing up that it was about church work, that we had to work our way and do things beyond even our ability to prove that we were Christians. So, I'm so glad that you're speaking those things about the Bill of Rights and personal Bill of Rights, because these are some things that have never been spoken to people. But Jesus was a caring person. He made sure that people were taken care of, and he even recognized his limitation in the human flesh, like when he fed the 5,000, okay? Mm-hmm. As a human, he didn't feed 5,000. The feeding of 5,000 was the miracle. So he used his deity, you know, because he was not just all man, he was human and spiritual. And even if he could minister to 5,000 people and preach to 5,000 people, but he relied on God to feed the 5,000 people. And sometimes we'll minister to people and we can talk to them, but we can't take care of them. And, you know, I was really excited to hear Brother Mike respond because it triggered something in him that he needed. And a lot of what you said, people really need to get an understanding that loving yourself doesn't mean you're conceited or that you're putting yourself, that it's bad to put yourself before others. Because if you don't take care of yourself, how can you take care of anybody else? Even as caregivers, you have to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I've been working in adult services for years, and I see where even in the caregiving situation where the caregivers pass away and the person they're taking care of continue to live because the caregiver didn't keep up with their health. And, you know, you say, did you go to the doctor? I don't have time. But if you don't take care of yourself, you're not good for anybody else. It's not a witness. You're not a good witness.
That's right.
You're broken down. You know, so.
Right. Well, thank you, Adonna. Adonna, she is a pastoral counselor, and she also works along with me in the practice of Totally Whole. So she also helps teach people, you know, how to be healthy and how to be whole. So thank you for your comments. And I want to piggyback on something that Adonna said. that how Jesus, he used his deity to feed the 5,000. He was human, but he was also divine. So that meant that, you know, tapping into his divinity, he had unlimited amounts of time and energy and resources. But we are finite. We are limited in how much time we have, how many resources we have to bear. So that says that we need to manage the little time that we do have to take care of ourselves. So we need to portion out time for others, but also not give all of our time away to other people, places, or things. So that was very, very powerful. Do I have any other callers who would like to chime in on the discussion? Just hit 1 on your telephone, and you will be invited into the studio. I was waiting for my god sister, Shakia, to call in. She wrote an awesome book called The Delicate Flower, a collection of affirmations for the trials that one will overcome. So hopefully she'll be able to get in on the conversation. So there might be others who heard the topic on self-love and self-care, and maybe you've learned from experiences. Maybe you have realized that you lacked self-love and self-care, and you had to learn the hard way on how to take care of yourself. Because the truth is that God, he always wants us to be aware, to be attending to our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health. And he will allow things to happen to get our attention. The key thing that God wants for us is to become aware. You know, I talked earlier about there's this unconsciousness that we have about things that we believe and behaviors that we engage in. It's not always conscious. It can be subconscious. So subconsciously, we can sabotage ourselves by not attending to ourselves, not attending to what we believe is right, and therefore we can deny ourselves of the precious gift of self-love. So I was talking about some examples of codependency. I talked about compulsive giving, but another example is poor self-image. So to the codependent, it's of utmost importance to them that others think well of them. It is to these same people that the codependent looks to for a sense of identity and for a sense of self-esteem. So the codependent, lacking a positive connection to their true selves, they can't turn inward to this power, this strength that we have on the inside, this source of identity and security. So they become dependent upon the outside world, upon other people to give them what they can't find within. Like the woman in the cave that I started out with, who was looking for the guru, looking for wisdom from the outside, knowledge. She looked for books to give her what she lacked on the inside. So it's this inner sense of poverty, this sense of lacking that leads codependents to attach themselves to others through making themselves helpful and needed. So in other words, being needed by others provides this feeling of value and positive identity for the person who on the inside has negative self-images, low self-esteem. So that's how people become addicted to work, to ministry, to relationships, because their need to be needed makes them overly sensitive to other people's expectations, to other people's desires. And because they have low self-esteem, they are predisposed to seeking value and worth and identity and doing for others. For example, what about people who stay committed to an abusive relationship? What about those who continue to work on jobs that are not fulfilling, that are oppressive, that are abusive, on jobs where they are grossly underpaid? What about the person who continues to make excuses for a loved one who clearly has a drinking problem or a drug problem? What about the adult, the parent that takes care of a grown child who shows them no respect or have no sense of responsibility for themselves? The next thing I want to talk about is shame. A codependent is a person that's filled with shame. And shame is a false identity. Shame is a person who has a flawed sense of self. Shame says, I am a mistake. This comes from a person who grew up not having been appreciated, not feeling accepted. So shame is a belief that I am bad, that I am inadequate, I am unworthy, that I am defective, or that I'm not fully valid as a human being. I want to do a shame check. Ask yourself whether you have these feelings towards yourself. I sometimes feel as if I am a fake. I feel that if people who admire me really knew me, they might have dislike for me. I feel inadequate. I seldom feel as if I am up to what is expected of me. When I look inside of myself, I seldom feel any joy at what I am. I feel inferior to the really good people that I know. I feel as if God must be disgusted with me. I feel flawed inside, blemished. I sometimes feel dirty. I feel as if I just cannot measure up to what I ought to be. I feel as if I will never be acceptable. That's the voice of shame. So ask yourself, do I have any of these feelings towards myself? The response to the question, how can we be made whole? There are a few. I want to just give a few tonight, and then we'll have to finish part two because I'm almost out of time. So the first thing that I want to say is how to begin to reclaim love of self. First is come to voice. Reclaim your voice. So when I talk about coming to voice, this is a technique that's used to help persons to acknowledge their own voices by validating their own experiences. You are your own expert on who you are and what you know and what you have experienced. Often as women, we are not afforded the opportunity to be heard and acknowledged, which causes a sense of alienation and sometimes denial of our true selves. But think about not just women, but people who might have been oppressed, people who have a history of discrimination, of a violation, people who have been silenced or marginalized. Once you realize who you are, you can come to voice and experience life-changing results. Jesus' ministry to people, to women, is an example of the power of coming to voice. I often like to use the woman at the well. She was a Samaritan, and we know the story. She had been in several relationships or several broken marriages and was living with a man. So she was seeking some type of validation, probably feeling a sense of shame. She was looking for acceptance. But when she met Jesus, he forgave her. He accepted her. He did not condemn her. He didn't push her away. So after she began to talk with Jesus, she came to voice. So this woman left her past behind, and she made the necessary steps towards a liberation, towards freedom from her suffering. So coming to voice really says that we should accept and receive the invitation that Jesus says, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." So what God wants to do is to free us up, so that we are not dependent on other people, that we're not dependent on things, that we realize that he has given us strength and power from within, and we can tell our own story. We can now speak with power from a voice that's no longer silenced. So we can begin to affirm for ourselves, we can name for ourselves, we can actually begin to use the rights, stand up for the rights that we already have. We have some God-given rights. So that's the one point of learning how to reclaim love of self, is to reclaim our voice, to be able to speak as God has given us voice to speak. So as I close, I want to just give us some tips on self-care. So self-care can be categorized in a couple of categories. First is physical self-care. How do we take care of ourselves? And we all know these. Eat healthy and regularly. Exercise. Take time off when you're sick. Go and get a massage. Get enough sleep. Wear the clothes that you like. Take vacations. It can be many vacations. Take a few days off. Take a vacation, even if you can't go anywhere extravagant. Take some time off to do what pleases you. So that's physical self-care. Then there's psychological self-care. Take time away from the telephone. It's okay to turn off your cell phone, turn the ringer off, and give yourself some time and space. Make time for self-reflection. Aristotle, the great philosopher, he said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." When have you taken the time to reflect on your day, to reflect on how you are living? Take time for self-reflection. Journaling, writing out your thoughts, your feelings. Attempt to minimize the things in your life that create stress. Another great self-care tip is to just learn how to say no. And as I close, I look like I have Shakia on the line. I want her to close out this segment with some thoughts from her own personal experience. Hi, Shakia. Welcome to Totally Whole.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that you could join us.
Yes, I was definitely listening in. I was listening in, and it's an amazing show.
Thank you.
Great, I was listening.
Now, as I told the listeners, that you wrote a book called The Delicate Flower.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there was one poem that you wrote, "Who Are You?" Is that something that I can share with the listeners, and you can probably talk to us about how you have been able to learn self-love?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. This particular poem is called "Who Are You?" Who are you? Do you even know? Do you even remember? You used to know. It's important for you to know. I remember you. I know who you are or who you used to be. This is what I remember. I remember that I was so strong that I didn't let anything or anyone get in my way. I remember being so happy because I made myself happy and didn't wait for anyone. I used to be so beautiful inside and out. But now I'm letting people stand in my way. I remember that my faith was so strong that I could lift the world on my shoulders without flinching. I remember I was so focused, so determined, but now I'm focusing on things and people who are not focused on me. I remember when I used to cry tears of happiness instead of hurt and pain. I remember I was so full of life. Here I am, deep inside of me. It's been a struggle, but I'm coming back out soon. I miss being me. Here I am. Thank you for remembering. Your remembrance helps me, pushes me, guides me to be me. Who are you? Awesome. That's a powerful poem. So, Shakia, what can you tell us about self-love?
You know, one, I would just like to say thank you for the opportunity for reading that piece. When I wrote that piece, not only was it for me, it was for my clients. You know, I'm also a social worker, also a therapist. You know, the women in my life, the men in my life, the children in my life, you know, and my surroundings. And, you know, I sat down and I said, you know, we have forgotten who we are. We have forgotten who we are as a people. We have forgotten who we are as God's children. We have been so accustomed to doing and being for other people. And when I think about it, you know, I say, you know, we are the closest to God when we are in our mother's womb. And when we come out of the womb, we grow and we experience the world. And a lot of times we forget and we lose our way and we forget who we are. It is so important to care for self. Yes. We cannot continue to care for others without taking care of ourselves, because it is not beneficial for either party.
That's right.
It is important to do the necessary internal work on ourselves first. You know, sometimes we can teach and we can preach and we can, you know, tell other people what they should do and how they should do it. But it is when we actually take the time to go inside of ourselves to do the necessary work for ourselves, then we are the best teachers and the best preachers and the best example to help someone else be their best self. So it's important that we learn how to be our best self so that we can help other people be their best self. I would also say that, you know, quite often we bury and we hide who we are to please other people. And that is not self-love or self-care, and that is not the God in you. So that we have to bring out those things that we have buried, that we have hidden, that we have attempted to forget, you know, so that we can bit by bit heal those things, so that we can bit by bit heal ourselves. And, you know, a lot of the things that you said this evening, you know, it was, you know, just so on point even with that particular piece, because we have to be our own voice. And we, you know, there's something that I always say is we have to court ourselves. We have to court ourselves, because how can you demand someone to treat you a certain way, to love you a certain way, to have a relationship with you in a certain way, if you have not taken the time to learn how to have a relationship with yourself, how to love yourself, how to care for yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's just very important that we, you know, we take that time and know that we're worthy. We're worthy because we are God's children. You know, God created us in God's image. So who are we to deny ourselves the love and the self-care that is rightfully ours? So I just, you know, for myself and, you know, for your listeners and, you know, and everyone whose lives we are able to touch, I would just, you know, suggest and encourage that, again, we take the necessary time to do our inner work so that we can love ourselves as God loves us.
Amen. That is so powerful. What a great way to close this segment. I was just, as you were talking, Shakia, I was just thinking about the song by Anthony Brown, and I just heard him, not him, but I heard that song being sung in church on yesterday, Worthy, how God, you know, he thought that we were worth dying for, that he sacrificed his life. He thought that, you know, we were worth saving, you know, so that he wants us to be free and to be whole. So we have to realize our worth in the eyes of God, because if God, you know, found us to be so worthy that he sent his only begotten son to die for us, how much more so we, being created in the image of God, should live our lives in a manner that will be pleasing to him. So as we begin to love ourselves, we're saying, God, I thank you for taking the time to send your son to die for me. So therefore, I want to live a life that's pleasing, a life that is worthy of the sacrifice that you made. So to sum it all up, you know, self-love stems from our love of God the Father. So do you know who you are? Are you practicing self-care? And one thing that you said, Shakia, is that we should want to be our best selves. And isn't it great that God sent his best for us? So how much more so should we want to be our best for others? So thank you for listening, and this is part one. I wasn't able to finish. There's so much information on this topic. But if you would join us again in 2 weeks, on next week, Pastor Bridget Goins-Gray, she will introduce her topic because we alternate. So 2 weeks from tonight, come back to hear part two of self-love. Is self-love selfish? Is it biblical? And how are you loving yourself? So stay tuned for our promo. I wish you all the best. And if you want to reach me, you can give me a call at 410-728-1800. That's the office, Totally Whole Pastoral Counseling Services, located at 1701 Madison Avenue, Suite 500. If you know of someone who might be in need of counseling, individual counseling or couples counseling, please have them to call, and I can begin to work with them and help them to be whole and to be healed. Because remember, God doesn't just want us to be healed, but he wants us to be whole, nothing missing and nothing broken. So have a great week. God bless you. And stay tuned for our general promo.
Mm-hmm.